This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
So I left from California on my bicycle, no food, no money, and I had a sign that said, biking across country, ran out of food, anything helps. And I was standing in front of grocery stores, and if I was fortunate to receive some help, I'd ask the person, hey, do you have a story when somebody helped you and you really needed it? And so people started sharing these stories with me. And my goal was to get to New York City. Yeah, and I crossed the Rocky Mountains twice and the Sierra Nevadas and crossed in the desert and the Great Plains and was just meeting people the whole time and learning about their experiences.
That was Daniel Troia, today's guest, sharing a bit about the bike trip he took back and forth across the USA. Daniel creates travel documentaries that, quote, combine the themes of adventure with human connection, something that I know will resonate with the listeners here. And his recent film, We Are All in This Together, is about the journey you just heard him describe. It's garnered 15 awards at various film festivals around the country, and for good reason. I watched it. It is a great film. And today, you'll hear our conversation as we go behind the scenes. Daniel will recount his adventure from a travel perspective, the making of the film, how the people he met along the way changed his life, some of the biggest lessons he learned along the way, like this one.
There's so many things that are out of our control, but like the one thing we can control is just like how we treat each other.
Let's get into it. Thanks for being here and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, it's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. And at the time of publication, we are just one day removed from Earth Day, which marks the anniversary of the birth of the modern environmental movement in 1970. So why not do a good old-fashioned human-powered adventure story, not just because Daniel was pedaling a bike across the USA and back. That is, of course, a human-powered adventure, but this trip was also powered by the kindness of strangers, as you'll hear in today's conversation. Along the way, you'll also learn why he felt uncomfortable pretty much the entire time, one creative decision he made for the film that made the biggest impact, some powerful serendipitous moments, some advice on long-distance biking and hitchhiking, advice on dealing with confrontations on the road, and tons more. You can check out this film, by the way, at weareallinthistogethermovie.com. We'll link up to everything in the show notes. And stick around on the back end if you want to hear a little story from a listener in this community who's got an exciting travel accomplishment, and she wanted to share her gratitude with you for something I'm sure you've done at some point along the way. So stick around for that. Plus, I'll leave you with a quote. For now, let's get into this chat with Daniel Troia. Awesome guy. Please enjoy, and I will see you on the other side, my friend. Cheers.
I'm excited to have you on, I should just formally say. Daniel Troia, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend. How you doing?
Dude, so stoked to be on the podcast. I was just listening to the interview that you did with Rick Steves.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Dude. Is he somebody you'd followed in the past? Or
Absolutely. He's my hero.
Yeah, he's a legend, man. It's Rick.
He really is. And you guys were just rolling with your conversations, man. I'm just very envious of it.
Oh, that's cool, man. Thanks. Thanks for listening. And, you know, I got to watch your film the other day. I've been a bit under the weather and I'm like, this is the perfect thing to do. I can watch it. This is my job. I can just lay on the couch here and watch this cool travel film. Okay. Well, I saw at the end that you gave a shout out to Rob Greenfield, and he was actually one of the first guests on this podcast. I think he was one of like the first 10 interviews. I don't know. Do you have a connection with him? Because he's a guy that's, you know, ridden bikes across the US with no money and kind of done the whole thing before. Was he an inspiration for you, or?
That's really funny you say that, man. I actually was living with Rob Greenfield for 7 months last year. I was producing his videos. I read Rob's book about biking across America back like 7 years ago or something, and he was dumpster diving the whole time, you know. And that was part of the inspiration. I saw that he was able to get so much food from the dumpsters. A couple of years ago, he was speaking in Santa Cruz, California, and I went up there with the intention of saying, like, hey, man, if you need someone to help with your videos, I'd be down. And just coincidentally, the person that was producing his videos had just put their 2 weeks in. And so then the next day, I put my 2 weeks in, and I moved across the country to Asheville, North Carolina, and we worked together for like 6 months.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So has he been like a bit of a mentor for you in some ways? Or I know you were working with him, but...
Yeah, you know, I just learned so much from him because he's living a very different lifestyle, and it made me question the life that I was living. And I've just got so much inspiration from the way that he was doing his own thing and not caring about what people think.
Yeah, we should explain with Rob. He's a guy that's dedicated his life to, how would you summarize it in a sentence? Like, kind of just being as gentle on the land as possible, which means he's been a big advocate for food waste, which you mentioned, the dumpster diving. I think traditionally, maybe not on this podcast, because I think this is something that some people are aware of. But if you're hearing that and you're thinking dumpster diving, that's what bums and homeless people do. Actually, Rob has been doing this for a long time. We can talk about your experience doing it to just kind of show how much food gets thrown away, specifically in America, but other countries as well, even though it's perfectly good. And so he'll do all these dives and like lay out all this food and show how much is getting thrown away when there are people hungry. And it's not maybe what you're thinking if you're hearing this for the first time. Yeah, he lives off the land. He's done all these crazy challenges and travel with no money and all this stuff. Yeah, so as far as your film, We Are All In This Together, which people can check out, weareallinthistogethermovie.com. We'll link to that. Let's just talk about the chronology. Did you do this adventure before you started working with Rob or after? I'm not really sure when this went down.
Yeah. It was before working with Rob. A couple of years ago, somebody gave me a book called The Kindness of Strangers. And it was about a person who hitchhiked across America in the 90s and with no food or money. And it was about all the stories he had and the people he met. And after reading that book, I felt super inspired, and I thought, man, I would love to do something like that, but I'd love to create a film somehow. And I was thinking about it, and then I came up with the idea of using camera glasses, like hidden camera glasses, to capture the interactions that I had with people. So in the moment, they didn't know I was making a documentary, you know, and then afterwards I would tell them I was making a documentary, et cetera. But yeah, so that I did that first, and then last year I went and worked with Rob. So it was a couple of years after I finished the film.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, the glasses were key, man. I was going to bring that up as one of the critical things. That was a great idea, because you have to think about the psychology of some of these formats, right? Like, I love podcasting because it feel like, all right, we're recording, but it's just you and me, we're talking, we're on an internet call, but I feel like you can get past the sort of... Yeah, you can get into a deeper conversation, but with video and all that, when the camera's in somebody's face, it adds a whole different dynamic. And if you're not somebody who's a seasoned veteran in front of the camera, and you're getting in front of a camera all of a sudden, you can't help but, you know, stiffen up. And it's hard, you know, it takes time to be yourself and get used to that. And with the glasses, people didn't know. That's what I liked about the film, because it was kind of raw in that way. Like, it was raw travel. In that way, it wasn't polished. It wasn't like the TV hosts kind of presenting the thing, and everybody knew they were on camera and it's a, sort of a set and all. It was genuine interactions, which was really cool, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. And that was the goal, yeah, because I figured if they knew that they were being filmed, they're going to act way different, obviously. And so I was just trying to capture, that was the key word, raw, genuine interactions.
Yeah. So at what point did you tell them after talking?
Yeah. So after they would share their story, I'd say, hey, I'm actually making a documentary, and I'd like to know if I can use this footage. And they would either say on camera, like, my name is Joe Smith and you can use this footage. Or I got their emails. And then when I got back home, I sent them a waiver and they signed the waiver to be in the film.
Okay. Yeah. Was anybody pissed? Like, what? You've been recording me the whole time? This is BS. No,
you know, thankfully, because I was capturing people doing like kind things and sharing like compassionate stories, that nobody was angry about it. There was a couple people who said, you know, I prefer that you don't use the footage. And I totally understand that. And, you know, obviously they weren't in the film, but everybody was really cool because it showed them in a positive light.
It sounds like film is your sort of preferred medium in terms of how you creatively express yourself. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I'd say so, definitely. I mean, but first of all, man, just like you, I just feel like I'm a traveler, man, you know, and that's just at heart. And just the filmmaking, that's just kind of like, I just started doing it a couple of years ago. And it's funny, I was at this film festival and I was fortunate to receive this award. And I got up there on stage and the first thing that came to mind was like, I'm just some guy who like likes to travel and ride his bike. And this story just happened to come to me, you know, but yeah, first and foremost, I'm a traveler. And as you know, it's just so many beautiful, incredible moments can happen when you step out of your comfort zone and you meet people who are different than you, you have different experiences, and it's just, you experience so much personal growth and you feel inspired, and it's just, you have a better understanding of humanity in general, you know? So traveling is just the best thing ever.
Yeah. Was it overwhelming sometimes to have to document it? I mean, the challenge itself, you were riding your bike, and we can lay it out, but I mean, you were riding your bike across the US and you left with no money, right? Like, you just give people the overview of like the intention of the trip, and then we can go further.
Yeah. There. Yeah. So I left from California on my bicycle, no food, no money. And I had a sign that said biking across country, ran out of food, anything helps. And I was standing in front of grocery stores, and if I was fortunate to receive some help, I'd ask the person, hey, do you have a story when somebody helped you and you really needed it? And so people started sharing these stories with me. And yeah, my goal was to get to New York City. And yeah, and I crossed the Rocky Mountains twice, and the Sierra Nevadas, and crossed in the desert and the Great Plains, and was just meeting people the whole time and learning about their experiences.
Yeah, it was cool because when you see the film, I mean, you had some great shots, just you on the bike. Like I said, it's pretty raw, right? It's not super polished. I don't mean that in like a negative way. I mean it in a good way. I mean, this is travel. So yeah, I felt really in the trip a bit, much more than I would in like a really polished like travel TV show, because you're on the bike and you're battling the wind. You can hear the wind. You have these personal confessionals, let's say, because you're out on the bike and you're on the loneliest road of the world, like this 300-mile stretch or whatever, and talking about how hard it is. And it's not like an acting job. You can see you're really struggling and you're running out of water and all this stuff. And then seeing the interactions, it brought me back to my travels, because you were wearing the glasses and they were genuine and you could see how people would open up. From a travel perspective, you know, was it difficult to balance the experience with the documenting of the experience?
It was at times. Yeah, I definitely struggle with that, especially like once I got into the mountains and like, for example, there was a snowstorm coming my way and I was riding up this mountain pass. And so one aspect I was thinking, I got to get over this mountain pass quick, right, before the snowstorm comes. But then the film side of it was like, well, this is some really amazing footage you could get, and I don't want to skip this part. So there was definitely times like that. And then, you know, standing on the street corner as time went on, that was really starting to wear on me in front of grocery stores and street corners. And there were times where I didn't want to film that because I just wanted to try to get some food and get out of there. The lifestyle was really starting to wear on me at that point, you know?
So yeah, what that means in practical terms, like the mountain pass example, you're wanting to get a shot where you have to maybe ride up to the top of the pass first, set a camera up so you can actually get yourself riding to the pass and then going backwards and going up and just kind of spending time setting up shots like that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'd say that's a good way of describing it. And also, you know how it is when you're traveling, sometimes when you break out a camera, it just kind of interrupts the flow of your experience, if that makes sense. And so the good thing was with the GoPro, at least it's like you could just have it on your chest and then you just ride and then like, you don't have to worry about anything else. But like the drone, like having to stop the bike and like get a drone shot sometimes would just interrupt that feeling of like excitement.
Yeah. How are you steering a drone when you were riding a bike like that?
Yes. So what I did was I would program the drone to fly a specific route. And then I would hit record And then I would just ride into the shot, right? And I put the remote like on my front rack, so it was hidden in between my bags, so you couldn't see it, and it looked like somebody was filming for me that way.
Yeah, okay. Very creative, man. Had you ever stood outside of somewhere like that with a sign and put yourself in that position before that first moment when you had to go out and do it?
You know, that's a really great question, man. And like 4 years earlier, I was biking from Portland, Oregon back down to California, and I ran out of food and money, right? And so I made that exact same sign. And that day there was a man who was living on the streets, and he bought me a sandwich with his food stamps, right? And I remember that moment was like very impactful for me. And I thought, man, I would have loved to be able to capture this moment and share it with people. And I think I wrote about it on Facebook or something, but then that was definitely part of the inspiration behind it. But other than that one day, I didn't do it any more than that.
Yeah. So that was like a circumstantial thing, but this is like you said, this was more of, you were going into the lifestyle of this, because you weren't leaving with any money. So this was like full commitment. I'm going to have to totally rely on people I meet. You mentioned later on, but I'm sure there were times throughout where you were feeling, you said, shame and embarrassment and things like that. This part's important to talk about, I think, because, you know, you see, there are a lot of articles, like we've talked about it in the newsletter and on the podcast. There's like, I don't know if you ever heard the term bag packing, where there's backpackers out there that are like asking for money. And some people feel very strongly about these things. And, you know, you were straight up in the beginning, which I thought was really important. And you said right in the beginning of the film, quote, "It is important to recognize that my skin color gave me advantages while on the road. And I also had support back home that others don't." I understand the spirit of your project, because you were trying to demonstrate the kindness of strangers and show it in an authentic way. So this line of questioning isn't like meant to attack. This is, I totally agree with what you've done. And I think it's a really cool piece of art that you made. And I think it's impactful, but I'm sure, you know, you've heard the other side of that, where people are like, well, how does, you know, you've got, how do you feel if you're, you know, you have money in the bank at home, I'm assuming you have some, and like a homeless person's giving you like the last $3 they just got or whatever. Was that a struggle for you?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up, Jason, because it always, I always love sharing this story. The first person that was living on the streets that shared their money with me, initially I declined it because I felt guilty. And then he told me, "By you not accepting this money, you're denying me the opportunity to do good." He's like, "Because I gained something out of giving you something." Right. And so from that moment on, whenever anybody offered me anything, even if someone was offering me something with their food stamps, I accepted it. Because again, I think a lot of times in life, sometimes we receive, it's more meaningful when we're giving somebody something compared to receiving it. So yeah, but again, yeah, like the guilt and the shame was there for sure. I was on the road for 7 months, and I never once got used to holding my sign out there. I always felt uncomfortable during the entire time.
That was one of the themes that seemed to come up, and then you mentioned it later, was that it was like the people that had the least amount were the ones that were giving the most. And I think it was because they've been in that situation before, and so they're familiar with it. Again, like I understand within the context of the project, you're not, you were doing this for a purpose, right? For your own transformation, but also, and for your own experience, but also you're sharing this and showing something to others. I mean, what were some of the other themes that you kind of identified coming out of this, in terms of like the one I mentioned is, you know, the fact that a lot of people don't have a lot or giving the most. Was there other stuff, I guess, other things that you noticed along those lines, like sort of general themes that popped up?
Absolutely, man. I mean, just those who faced the adversity, a lot of people who had faced adversity in their lives, it just seemed like they sensed my energy more, if that makes sense. I mean, there was, for example, when I was in Oregon towards the very end, and my body was feeling beat up, and mentally I was feeling beat up because just the stress of trying to find a safe place to sleep and trying to find a place to bathe and standing on the corner and all that, like, it was weighing me down. And so I was putting out a different energy at this point. And there were people walking past me on the sidewalk, and I didn't have my sign out. But one person stopped, and it was a man who was living on the streets. His name was Gary. And he said, "Are you okay, man?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just kind of stretching out. My body's hurting a little bit." And he was the person who ended up going across the street and buying me a bag of groceries with his food stamps. And then he gave me a hug. And I just bring up him because that's something that I learned, is just he sensed my energy because he'd been through hard times himself. And I think that's why a lot of people walked past me and didn't notice it, because they weren't on the same like energy level, if that makes sense.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Now, back to the show.
How much more connected do you feel to, what I say, America, or just to humanity after doing this?
Yeah. I mean, I never really paid attention to like energy levels, et cetera. Like if somebody was feeling, if I did notice that somebody was maybe not feeling well, I kind of avoided it because I was uncomfortable. But after going through this experience, I just feel like I'm way more tuned in now to when somebody is putting that energy out there. And now I just make more of an attempt to at least like let them know that they're seen. And because there was a lot of times when I was on the road and I just felt like people wouldn't make eye contact, and just I started to feel kind of invisible out there. And when, even if somebody didn't have anything to give, if they just kind of like said, "Have a nice day, man," and acknowledged me, I like meant a lot to me. And as far as the, you know, the humanity aspect, I just learned, like, I think we really bond around grief. That was like one of the biggest lessons I learned. It just seems like that's like a huge part of being human, is we all struggle with grief at some point of our lives. And I noticed that that was always a good place to bond. Yeah. And I guess also just the togetherness aspect, when people are here sharing these stories, it's like, oh, like whether it was the person who shared stories about drug addiction, you know, or was the person who shared stories about losing a loved one. Like, it's like, I think we can all relate to at least one person that showed up in the film, you know?
It's tough. You want to be a good person. And there's such a homeless problem now in the States, you know, it's terrible. I don't know how it is on the West Coast. I haven't been for a while, but I mean, there was points where I've been certain places where it's like, you know, every corner you drive up to, there's somebody standing there with a sign. And then you can understand, it's just human nature that people start to become oblivious, or they're not doing what you said, which is connecting or making eye contact or just being friendly about it, even if they're not going to give money. Of course, you put yourself into that lifestyle, so you're going to become one of those invisible people to other people at some point. And that doesn't make it right, of course. That's just the way it is sometimes. And how has it changed your behavior on a daily basis? Do you still find yourself kind of slipping into that modality?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is the first thing that comes to mind when you say that, man, is I still, in my daily life, I'll see places in public and I'll think like, oh, I could sleep behind there. And that's kind of interesting, like strange, but like, cause that was such a huge part of the lifestyle, was trying to find like safe places to sleep in public. Yeah. That stands out to me. I mean, again, I think, just my interactions with people, I just feel like I'm a little more present now, if that makes sense, again, because I was very fortunate before going on this trip. I've had friends and family throughout my life, you know, and while I was on the road, my beard started growing longer. I started getting harassed more and people were yelling things, throwing things. And that was starting to really affect me. So when somebody would stop and speak to me or again, just like acknowledge me, like it really helped me. And I mean, in regards to the, you know, the homeless situation, at least in the States, which is so bad right now, I don't always have like, you know, money to, I don't always give money or food to them. But again, for me, like, I think that like just treating people with respect is that's helpful at least, you know, I mean, there's so many things that are out of our control, but like the one thing we can control is just like how we treat each other.
Well, that's one of the beautiful things about this mode of travel, right? Bicycling, you are on the streets, you're going to interact with, I mean, it's inevitable. You can't avoid the interactions, whether they're awkward or scary or, you know, kind, whatever, you're going to get kind of a bit of everything. That's what travel is, right? We put ourselves out there. From a biking across the United States perspective, just a travel perspective, like maybe there are people listening, it's like, that sounds really cool. Maybe they want to do it with money. you know, maybe they don't want to go so extreme. But yeah, what would be your advice for somebody that wants to do a full cross-country trip or even like a longer distance trip in the States? Let's say they maybe want to do a mix of hotels and finding places to sleep or things like that. I just wanted to hear your best advice from a travel perspective.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is slow down. Give yourself plenty of time to where if you want to stop in a town for 3 hours and talk to some local old men at a park that are sitting on a bench, like do it. I find it myself at times there was like an ego sometimes I would feel with bike. I think within the bike touring community, it's like, it always gets brought up like, how many miles are you doing a day? Which in reality, it doesn't matter how many miles you're doing a day, you know, like if anything, the less miles, the more you get to experience as far as talking to people, et cetera. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And I think the other thing is, I know it's intimidating, but as soon as you do that first day, you complete that first day, you've done it. You're on a bike tour. And then you just repeat that over and over again. And all of a sudden, after 2 weeks or so, you say, oh my gosh, I've ridden across, you know, the whole state. Or, you know, so I think that, those are the first things that come to mind. And eat often. It's unbelievable how hungry you get when you're on a bike tour.
Well, what about pre-planning going through a desert area, for example, with water and all that? That part is, there's some logistics to figure out, right? I mean, do you have any resources or how did you kind of plan for that stuff?
Yeah. Well, the desert, man, I thought I was prepared for that going across it. And I ran out of water.
It seemed really intense, man, because there's nothing. You're out there, you know, you can die.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of those days where it was 84 miles and I had 3 mountain passes to climb and, there was no services in between there and no shade out of any, you know, that was the most important thing. And I ran out of water with like 35 miles to go, but that's not a normal situation with most bike touring. You know, I would say, you know, always carry in the desert. It's different because there's not going to be any water, but in general, it's always nice to have a water purifier with you and things like that. Yeah.
But there was nowhere to get water, even if.
Yeah. That was just, yeah. I remember waking up that morning and I remember feeling very anxious about that ride. And I started that ride at like 5 a.m. because I was trying to beat the heat, but I went through my water really quick. And but there was a part of me that I did plan that for like the first quarter of that ride, of that bike trip all the way to Colorado. Like that was planned because I wanted to go across those like really intense areas of the country just for kind of like the high of it, you know.
It wasn't hard enough to go without money. You had to like go through the desert and yeah.
Yeah, I guess so, man. You know, it's funny. It's like my grandpa, he immigrated from Sicily to New York and then to get to California in like the 1930s, he was hopping like train cars with like hobos, you know, and like he used to tell these stories. And like as a kid, I used to hear these stories and I was like, I want to do something like that, you know?
Yeah. Was that the first seed of this this adventure, do you think?
I think so, honestly, because I don't remember. Oh, that, and honestly, watching Forrest Gump when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing him run across the country, I remember thinking, that's so cool. And then, I mean, just in regards to travel stories, I'm sure you have a ton of these, like people you meet on the road, you know, et cetera. And when I was in Amsterdam, when I was 25, I met this girl who was riding her bike across Europe by herself and busking for money. And I remember watching her sing. And then after she was done, like asking her, like, where are you coming from? And where are you going? And I couldn't believe, I was like, wait, you're riding your bicycle across the continent? Like, I couldn't believe she was doing it. And after meeting her, like, I felt like so inspired and she changed my life.
That's amazing. Yeah, I have a story like that. I remember a guy I met at Smoky Mountain National Park. We were had off of work that day and we were in the park and it was a biker. He was either riding north to south or riding across some crazy distance. And I just, it never occurred to me that that was something you could do. It sounds silly, right? And now we're in this, I mean, in this podcast world here, the Zero to Travel community, we're definitely in this bubble where it's like, we just kind of take for granted. Well, everybody knows you can walk around the world and ride a bike across the states, you know, but it's not really a common, you know, even with the internet and everything, it's just that it takes sometimes somebody to meet somebody to kind of have those realizations. I mean, was it cool for you to be that person? Like you were that person that people met that they were like, their minds were blown that you could do something like this.
Yeah, that's a really great point, man. I'm glad you brought that up. And I felt honored because you kind of pass on that tradition to others, you know, and people are inspired by, I'm sure you've inspired, obviously.
You're that story now, Daniel.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what's so cool about travel, you know, and is now when I come across like people on bike tours, I always invite them to my house and I give them a place to stay. I cook them dinner because it's cool because like you just said, you're that story. So when they think about riding through California, they're like, oh yeah, remember we met that random guy who gave us a place to stay. And for me, I get inspired when I see these travelers and I want to become part of their story because I feel so inspired afterwards, you know?
Yeah. Well, there was the woman from Nicaragua where she kind of lit up when she came out of the car and she was like, oh, you're riding across the country. And then it turned out later that that was her husband's dream who had passed away. And there was also the woman that you were interacting with, and then she had like a son named Daniel, I think, that was sick, and you guys shared the same name. When you have those moments, I mean, I know how I kind of feel about those moments. Do you have spiritual beliefs around stuff like that, serendipity and things like that? What are your feelings around that? You've mentioned energy and stuff like that. I don't want to get too woo-woo here, but you know, I feel like when you're out in the world in the way you were, you think about these things.
Yeah. In regards to, there was a couple things that happened along the way that absolutely I felt like, and I don't say it very often, but it was meant to happen that way. And maybe it's just when you're, maybe it's, you know, Jay, like, you know, when you're traveling, you're just more open to saying yes to a lot of opportunities. So maybe that's part of it as well. But yeah, meeting Fabiola, who is from Nicaragua, and I actually saw her. It was crazy. I saw her in one part of Kansas City. And then she was so interested in my story. She was at a red light though, and she had to drive off. She's like, "Where are you coming from?" And I said, "I'm going from San Francisco." And then she drove off. And then 3 hours passed by. I go to the other side of Kansas City. I'm like panhandling, and then I ran into her again. And that was the footage that was in the film. And that's why I just thought, like, you know, that seemed like it was definitely meant to happen. Yeah, and then. Yeah, for sure. And also meeting the two guys with the flag in Pennsylvania, and their whole thing was saying, we fly this flag here because we want to know that everybody's welcome and it's a safe place. And then 3 weeks later, after having a really traumatizing night in Paterson, New Jersey, I hitchhiked and the person was driving to the exact same town where those people told me, you know, this is a safe place for you to stay. Right. And that just felt like, this is unbelievable that he's going to the exact same town.
Yeah. So you went back and that was pretty magical. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know, I thought you were going to ride your bike across and that was going to be the thing, but then you started going back west. Yeah. Did you have a time limit on this trip or was it just totally open?
No, it was totally open. And you know, the thing that inspired, I mean, when I got to New York City, it took me 3 months, right? Or like 3.5 months. And I just had this feeling like there was something that was missing. And I didn't realize it, but once I got back home, I realized I needed, the second half of the trip was the most difficult, like by far in so many ways. And I think that was the most impactful, and I needed to go through those difficult times to really understand like the connection with other people and humanity and kindness and compassion and empathy, because I was really struggling. And I was receiving less help. So the interactions I had that second half were becoming way more meaningful for me. And that was like where I feel like I had a better understanding of humanity.
Yeah. Going through the hardships. You were getting more. Yeah. I could see in your body language too. You looked a little, you just worn down and getting, when you're in that state, like these interactions and these kind, I mean, it's all heightened, right? It's more emotional in many ways.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You mentioned the body language, because sometimes when I go through old footage, I literally am like closing up towards the end.
Yeah, you were doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually uncomfortable going through that stuff. It brings back kind of like tough memories, but it's interesting, again, going to the energy, like when I was feeling good in the first, you know, 3 months of the trip, like I was open and I was welcoming people, right? Just from my energy. And by the end, without even trying, but again, because of all the just the stresses of the lifestyle that I was living, it was pushing people away when I needed them the most, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was a thing that stood out, the whole, yeah, the lifestyle kind of, you know, no matter how positive you are, I mean, you can understand the road just beats you down, or that lifestyle beats you down. And you might come across somebody that's just in that, you know, they're maybe a super positive person normally, but it's just after a while, you can only take so much, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is challenging. You didn't have to do any of this. Why did you feel like you needed to do this personally?
Yeah, I really appreciate you asking that question. I mean, in 2015, I really started to feel the tension in the country, and it like really bothers me. Like, I really don't like the fact that there's so much division in the country. And around that same time, my dad, you know, he died, and he was my, so both at that point, both my parents were, you know, had passed away. And so I was just really questioning, like, what am I doing, like, with my life, et cetera. And in a way, it kind of created a recklessness in me, but in a really good way. I remember thinking, like, I just want to go do something, because who knows how long I'll be around for. And I was feeling angry about the division in the country. And then I was trying to, and then I decided, like, well, maybe I can try to turn that anger into something positive, because the anger wasn't doing anything beneficial, you know? And so that's really what inspired the film, was just, I don't like the fact that we're so divided.
Yeah.
You know?
You lost both of your parents in a short period of time?
Yeah. Yeah. So my mother, she passed away 8 years earlier, and then my dad passed away. And then there was that, so he was my best friend, you know, and once he passed, that really just set off this recklessness. And that's why, again, the desert, I don't think I would have done any of that if he wouldn't have passed away, because it just felt like I want to, again, just go do something and just try to process everything. And that just felt like the right thing to do. And I guess more than anything, it felt like, what am I making out of my life at this time? You know, because when people that you love pass away, it gives you this whole different perspective about how short life is and what you're doing and what the point of, you know, your life is, et cetera. And so it was a blessing in disguise, for sure.
Tough, yeah. Though. Do you have any siblings?
Got two siblings. Yeah. 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 I'm so grateful for them. But when I was on the road, I wasn't really sharing stories with them on the road, because I didn't want them to get concerned about me.
Right. Yeah. You know? And are you based in California or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But similar to what you've been, I mean, I bounce around and travel most summers. I'm on the road, like doing different things, traveling, et cetera, you know?
Yeah. So after this experience, how has this impacted your sort of choices in terms of, you mentioned kind of going into this thinking, you know, what am I doing in my life, and some of these bigger questions? I imagine, obviously, you're still carrying a lot of these lessons with you today. Has it changed a lot of the decisions you make, or the way you make decisions?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind, man, is just like, I realize that every day, like, we have this opportunity to show up for someone, and it's so incredible. And we may not think it means much at the time, but it can literally change somebody's life. And again, it's not just about like giving food or money, but again, just showing up, like being present with somebody, can really make a difference. And so that's the first thing. I think it's so cool, because so many things in the world are just like out of our control right now. And the world is crazy right now, with things are changing so fast. And but the cool thing is like the one thing we can change is, again, like just how we treat each other. And that's what this bike tour like really showed me, is these people who just showed up and they changed my life.
Do you still feel it's divided, but you just feel more connected with everybody, or do you feel it's less divided? Listen, it's not like one way or the other necessarily. It's a lot of middle ground, but
yeah. I think that we have created a society through social media and not talking to each other in person, which has created division. And I think that if and when we talk to each other, we're not that different at all. I mean, I would say almost half the people I met had different political opinions than me during this experience. And again, we were talking in person about these things. And I was a bartender for a lot of years, right? And I remember 10 years ago when I was bartending, people would talk at the bar, right? And they have disagreements, but it was cordial. And it was because they were in person. But the fact that we're not communicating in person, I think that's a huge part of the reason why we're feeling all this division. So
we'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listener, it's Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show.
The film is a blend of, obviously it's the whole experience we described, but then you also do some narrating over top to tie things together and things like that. What was it hard to figure out what not to talk about? I mean, there's so many things you could talk about with this adventure and just around issues and division and all the things you just, I mean, there, you have a lot of choices to make, right? How did you sort that out?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It was difficult. I felt really uncomfortable about inserting myself into this story. I mean, I made numerous versions of this film. I mean, for example, I mean, this is something that was kind of crazy that happened, but in the first week when I started filming this movie is when I got to San Francisco, I injured my leg and I had to get a knee surgery. And so the first 10 minutes of this film was filmed in a different year. And so I spent a year rehabbing my knee. And originally in the first cut of the film, it showed me like rehabbing my knee and trying to get back on the road again. And then when I finished that version of the film, I just felt like that was taking away people's attention away from the main message of the movie. So I decided to cut it. But that's kind of an example of just, it was really difficult to think about like, what am I going to talk about? Because there's so many different aspects. And also like I had so much footage about from the lifestyle I was living, all the weird places I was sleeping in and just like that aspect, places I was bathing. But then I felt like, again, that was focused too much on me. So it was kind of hard to find a balance between it.
You're not necessarily the guy that's loving being in front of the camera, but that's just part of how you had to do this, right? I mean, that's,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, towards the end of the film, like I cry on camera, and I was the first two versions of the film, I didn't put that in there because I was so uncomfortable about that. But for example, that was one scene I knew like this has to be in the movie because it's like it's showing like how impactful this interaction was for me and how much I needed it. So there were times where I felt like, I got to put this in there.
Yeah. Did you find like the more you worked with it, the more you were able to kind of disconnect from yourself and see yourself as a character in a movie as opposed to it being you?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I finished the film 2 weeks before the country shut down for COVID. And then I just sat on the film for like a year and a half because all the film festivals were closed, et cetera. And so I didn't do anything with it for that long. And then after maybe like 8 months of not doing anything with it, I decided to go through it again with fresh eyes. And that totally helped me because if anything, I think I started editing the movie too early and I hadn't even processed like exact or and understood what that experience was even about, if that makes sense.
I mean, that's a metaphor for travel too, right? I mean, that's kind of the way it is with these trips. Sometimes you need space to process. Like you can journal like crazy afterwards, but sometimes the biggest revelations come a year or two or 10 later,
Exactly. Or 10. Yeah. And then as you know, I'm sure you have a lot of these kind of experiences where something that didn't feel as meaningful, maybe in the moment, now you look back and you're like, oh my God, that was so special when that happened.
Yeah. Or that one person said that one thing that really made me think and reconsider this decision, which totally changed my life, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And again, but that's what's so beautiful.
Yeah. You can't give that to somebody or you can't receive it if we're sitting, like you said, at the bar looking at your cell phones instead of talking to each other. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the first day you injured your knee? Bike
it was
riding,
the first week. It was unbelievable. And I'll tell you this though, man, when I left for that, I had a bad feeling. I had a bad feeling the moment of the day. And it's not usually like that when I travel, but I think, well, yeah, I'm not sure if I just kind of intuition was kicking in or what, but I remember I got to San Francisco and my knee was just killing me. And I just felt so embarrassed too. I was like, I can't believe this. But the interesting thing is I think that's why, again, like once my knee, I rehabbed, why I really wanted to push it because I felt like this could be taken away from me at any time. And so now that I'm healthy, like definitely like use your body while you can.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, kudos to you for just like having the fortitude to continue on and, you know, the perseverance, I should say, to get injured in the first week and then spend a year rehabbing and then come back to the same project and still do it. That's commitment, man. Well, that kind of says how committed you were to doing this for yourself and sharing it, right? Like that says it all.
Thank you for saying that. You know, it was the one time in my life, if it makes sense, where like once the idea came, it made more sense to me than anything else in my entire life. Like I've never had that with anything else, but it just made like, yeah. And even when I was on the road, I remember even when things weren't going well, just saying like, this is going to work out, you know?
Yeah. And now you've gotten, it looks like you got some awards for this film. How's that been?
Yeah. Let's talk about those.
What did you, what's it been like showing it? And then this is like the bragging part. I'm giving you permission to just brag here a little bit. You
Thank
know,
you,
I
man.
Know you're not that yeah. kind of guy, but you know, embrace it, man.
The really cool thing is I just feel like obviously the theme of the film is togetherness. Right. And it's so cool because this project is a collaboration with all these people that I met. You know, we all worked together to create this story. Right. And they unknowingly were creating this story. And so anytime that the film would get like recognized at a film festival, it's like all these people that I met on the road, like they are a part of that. And it's so special. Like we're sharing it together, you know? And what I love about the film festivals, man, is like, you know, there's a Q&A afterwards. And then after that, like, you know, there's always people who come up to me and they say, you know, like, they share a personal story with me, based on, you know, again, one of the people that showed up in the film. And so it's been super special to like, be able to receive these, like, have these like very vulnerable conversations with these like strangers. And then afterwards, I feel like we have a connection there, which is really awesome. You know,
that's beautiful, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The film acts as sort of it creates a safe container almost afterwards for people to connect.
Thank you for saying that, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah, that's really cool. You're probably not able to get in touch with some of the people you met, but the ones that you're in touch with, that you're sharing this with, it sounds like it's been pretty awesome to hear that they're fully supportive with the end product and excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the most special things about this whole experience was the very last person I met, that's in the film, excuse me. Like, I woke up, and again, this is one of those situations where I woke up in the morning in Arcata in the Redwoods, and I had a really good feeling. I remember saying out loud, something special is going to happen today. And I don't do that, you know, like I don't normally do that, but I had a feeling. And I met a person who was living on the streets named Tom, and he shared his cartoon with me. It was about love, compassion, kindness, and he gave me like $4 or $5 to get a sandwich. And again, he was living on the streets. And since then, Tom and I, every Sunday, we talk on the phone, you know, and it's so special. And I just feel like so grateful to have made that connection with this person, and also just to keep him updated, you know, and people love him. I mean, he's the closest thing to like a real life angel I've ever met.
Yeah. Tom stood out to me. Something about the look in his eyes. His eyes had some kind of angelic thing going on. I'm serious. It was like I got that feeling that came across in the film. He seemed like that special being.
Yeah, Jay, that's what's so important, so incredible about this is sometimes I'd have moments like that where I would like be tearing up, thinking like, oh my God, like this is a very like super special moment to share with this person. Like this person really cares, and that was so special about this is being in that vulnerable position. At times it attracted some really unique, special, loving people that I wouldn't have met if it wasn't for standing out there, you know, on the street with a sign. So I felt so fortunate to share those kind of moments with people.
Where do you think everything's going now for you?
Yeah, well, I've been sharing the film and using it to raise money for homeless shelters. And that's so special. I just feel so stoked that, so basically we'll rent out a theater and then all the proceeds, 100% of the proceeds will go to the homeless shelter. And then, we just raise money that way. And that's what I want to be doing the next year is just doing that. And also I mentioned Tom on my website, you know, we are all in this together movie.com. There's a link to buy to support his cartoons. His cartoons are about love, compassion, kindness. And cause Tom's still living on the streets. And so I was thinking it'd be really special if this film could help him, you know, raise some money, raise some funds, and eventually get a place to live. So
yeah, cool. Yeah, if there are any other links you want us to include in terms of like fundraising and things like that, we can drop them in the show notes for sure. So the next year you want to spend kind of promoting this film and fundraising, and in terms of creative projects, do you want to do more films or what are you thinking?
Yeah, for sure, man. So I'm releasing a new film in the spring. It's going to be called The Child Within. It was about this. I spent this past summer riding my bike across Europe. And this movie is just about, it's a sweet experience, man. And this film is about finding the thing that makes you feel like a child again. And that's what I'm going to be putting out in the spring. And then I'm thinking about next year, I want to do a film about gratitude and go across either Central America or South America. And it'd be kind of a similar theme with we're all in this together. I'd have money this time though, for sure. And
No, that's cool, man. Congrats. I mean, if you want to send me the rough cut, if you're looking for people to check it out, I'd love
Thanks,
to
Thanks, man. Absolutely.
That sounds really cool. I'll have to have you back for that one.
Appreciate that.
For sure. Any other tips with, you know, finding places to stay? And, you know, we talked about the dumpster diving thing and, you know, for budget travelers, even if you have a budget, these are, although they might sound crazy to some people listening, you might be surprised that you listen to some more interviews and a year later you're in the Zero to Travel bubble and you're like, oh, maybe this isn't so abnormal after all. Maybe these are like, I know plenty of like normal people, I'll say, I'm using air quotes here, who have, you know, fed themselves from dumpsters on bike trips and things like that. And it's not strange, although some people listening right now might think that's strange, but yeah. So I thought, you know, you've done a lot of this. You want to share some tips on finding stealth camping spots and also dumpster diving and things like that.
Definitely, definitely. So the as far as if you're finding trying to find a safe place to sleep, and not just with bike touring, let's say you're driving across the country or whatever, baseball field dugouts, they're always a great spot.
Yeah, I noticed you were like the baseball field guy. I was like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, definitely, because you have the dugout to keep you dry from the rain.
Right.
And then
you don't need a rain cover. You just set up a tent in there. Yeah.
Yep. And you can hide out there, and there's always a water source there. You know, they have a hose to water the field. So, and they're usually in a quiet area, you know, the back of a high school or something. So it's quiet away from stuff. And that's the first thing that comes to mind, you know. And the dumpster diving, I mean, I'm just call it out. I mean, Kroger and Aldi, I mean, they throw away so much food. It doesn't matter what country I'm in. If I see an Aldi, I know, oh, I'm going to go dumpster diving. Every time I find so much food that's thrown away. What I would do is I was usually go in the morning, you know, when they're throwing away all the food that's like past the sell-by date, which the food's still good for weeks, you know. And so that came to mind, definitely. And the other thing too is I think just when you're traveling, I mean, just say yes to a lot of opportunities. You know, I think that so many special things can happen just by saying yes.
What about advice for dealing with confrontations? I'm sure there's been have you ever, you know, run into like the store employee and they're like, get out of my dumpster, you know, the cops coming to the dugout or, you know, all these, I'm sure things happen. I mean, talk about some of the things that have happened and what your kind of approach is to dealing with confrontation.
Yeah. When it comes to the dumpster diving, there were times when someone would come out. And for me, I think just being respectful and saying, okay, I'll leave, you know, and not trying to, even though I don't believe, I think it's totally crazy that we're like getting in trouble for dumpster diving, but that comes to mind. And again, with the police thing, I mean, this is a tricky one because, I mean, I met a guy who was biking from New York back to California, and he was a black guy, and he told me, he said, where are you camping? I said, oh, most of the time I'm camping and just like dugouts. He's like, cops don't bother you? And he said, I was like, no. And he said, well, shoot, man, I was staying in a campground and somebody called the police on me, you know? And so it's a little different, like in regards to dealing with the cops and stuff. And so from my perspective, you know, and the, you know, the body that I live in. So, but yeah. And as far as confrontations too, I mean, there were times when I was in Kansas and I was in this kind of like, this dangerous area of the town. And I was trying to set up my tent and these three guys came over and like, they were definitely like sizing me up and they asked me what I was doing, et cetera, where I'm from. And then I remember them saying like, all right, like we'll see you later. And I remember instantly, like as soon as they said that, like they turned their backs, I just got out of there, you know, just like, cause that was just bad news. I mean, that does happen occasionally. You'll come in, you know, and for me, I'm trying to avoid all the violence I can and just get out, you know?
Why would they think you would stick around if they're like, we'll see you later?
I know.
Like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'll just settle in and, you know.
Maybe they weren't the most intelligent people.
You had the one lady in, I think it was East St. Louis, familiar with the neighborhood, where she was like, you shouldn't be riding here. This is very dangerous. And you were like, no, I'm okay. Why did you include that conversation in the film?
I thought it was important. I mean, it just kind of showed how dangerous that neighborhood was. I mean, I knew before going into that neighborhood, I mean, I knew it had the highest crime rate in the country for the last couple of years, but I thought like it's important to ride through just and see all aspects of the country. And once I was just planning on getting through there quick. And after speaking with her, she kind of freaked me out even more. But the interesting thing was at the end, cause I was afraid I didn't want to have my camera out after that and just being riding through like these neighborhoods and like filming stuff. And first of all, I felt like it could have been like, there's these like YouTubers who go online and they go like to like impoverished neighborhoods and they make money off of showing people who are like in despair. And I really don't like that, you know, kind of a side note, but I didn't want to be one of those people just filming other people's, like that's real life for them. But when I was coming out of East St. Louis, this is one thing I really wish I could have captured, but a man flagged me down and his clothes were in tatters. His name was Harold. He was 24 years old. He just got out of prison. He spent 6 years in prison and growing up in East St. Louis, like went through some super like traumatizing things. And he, within like 3 minutes, man, he was just telling me his whole life story. And he lifted up his shirt and, he had this scar from like his chest all the way down to below his stomach from when somebody just like carved him open in prison, you know, and he was so traumatized. And I'll never forget this is He was only 24, and him saying, he said, I don't know how much longer I'm gonna be around for. And it made me think, like, you know, about my life when I was 24. I was backpacking around Europe and I was in college and I had all these opportunities. And that's why I was so grateful to go through East St. Louis and actually to talk to her, because she kind of changed my route a little bit. And after speaking with her, like, I would have met Harold if it wasn't for having that, you know, interaction with her. And it was super impactful. So, and the sad thing, I mean, the sad reality is I don't, he probably isn't around anymore, just based on how rough it was there for him, you know?
You know, being on a bike, going through what, you know, is statistically one of the more dangerous neighborhoods in the country can't be a good feeling going into the day. You get somewhere and you meet incredible people all over.
Absolutely.
The place. You know, I've been in neighborhoods like that for different events and things I've worked on and various things. And I've just found so much love, so much welcoming, and, you know, things have happened and seen things, but also, you know, when it comes down to the connections, it's just connecting with some incredible people.
Mm-hmm. You know? And realizing that there's not that big of differences between people, you know, regardless of the neighborhoods that they're growing in. We all share the same human experiences.
Since you mentioned the bike ride in Europe, I was just curious if you could describe some of the major differences between the bike touring experience in the USA and the interactions and the people and the lifestyle. Well, the lifestyle might be different because of the way you were doing it versus in Europe.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that the infrastructure in Europe, like the places that I've biked at least, like, was so much better for cycling. I mean, like, so many bike paths all over the place, and that was great. And it seemed like there was even more interest from people, and I don't know why, but people were very curious, and like, I had a lot more interactions with people going across Europe, which was kind of interesting.
More interactions with strangers, you mean? Or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really? Yeah. And that was pretty cool. It's the cool thing about with bike travel is just, you have your bags on your bike and your sleeping bag, and people are very curious, you know, so you kind of attract attention. So I think it's a really special way of interacting with people when you're on the road. There was a lot more campsites in Europe too. Free campsites. They were way more open about, you know, camping in the woods, like you wouldn't get in trouble, and it was a little more like free in regards to that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that there's I know in Norway where I live, I mean, they have wild camping. It's legal, and you just have to be, you know, 100 yards from a front door of someplace. You know, there's some small rules, but so people are more used to that in some ways, I suppose. It is cool, like you just mentioned, when you're traveling in a unique way that's different from, let's say, the average tourist, whatever picture you have for that, you know, kind of the traditional ways of travel. You are a bit of a billboard in some ways. You're offering perhaps more opportunities to connect and also connect with different types of people, which I think is really a good thing. That's why, like, I love having people that have done adventures like this on, and it seems like one of the prevailing themes, and you can share, I mean, you blew out your knee in the first week of the first one, so maybe this isn't totally true, but generally speaking, I've had a lot of people on in a lot of different physical states saying that, hey, anybody can do this if they just kind of get up and pedal every day. This is a travel experience that most everybody can have, no matter how, and you don't have to be an Olympic athlete to do it, is what I mean. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the cool thing with bike touring, again, is like, you don't have to be riding 60 miles a day. I mean, you can ride 5 miles a day if you want to, and that's fine. I mean, you can be pushing your bike up the hills if you can't ride up them. The key is just taking that first pedal, which is super special. And I think that meeting other people who have done bike tours, I mean, you realize, like, we are so capable. We're so much more capable than we may realize. And that's something that's really special about the bike touring, because in no way do I consider myself any kind of like elite athlete or anything. I just think it was just staying consistent, you know, okay, today I'm going to ride 40 miles, you know, if I can, or, you know, and then again, after a couple of weeks, you realize, oh, I'm starting to cover some ground here. So just the mental aspect, I think, is trying to stay motivated and positive when you're on the road. That's key.
Yeah. One thing we didn't talk about was hitchhiking, which is something that you did on this adventure, hitchhiking. And I'm curious if you did more hitchhiking in Europe, you can share some advice around hitchhiking or some of your maybe kind of comparing those experiences of biking and hitchhiking as a traveler.
Yeah, the hitchhiking thing, I'd say that the first thing is have a creative sign. And this wasn't in the movie, but I had a sign when I was having trouble getting picked up, and I would flip my sign over because my sign at first just said like west, but then I'd flip it over if I was having trouble, and it said will not kill you.
You were split testing your messaging.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was funny because I did get picked up by a decent amount of people because they shared a laugh or whatever.
They thought it was funny. Yeah. And you were like, just kidding. I'm going to kill you.
Exactly. No. Yeah. The thing is with hitchhiking, I will say, I mean, you definitely really need to listen to your intuition though. That is one thing where in general, I feel like I'm pretty optimistic with travel and just safety, but hitchhiking definitely there were some times where I had a bad feeling and I didn't get in the car with some people because it just didn't feel right. You know?
Yeah. You were just like, no, it's okay. Just keep going.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'll pass. Yeah, definitely.
That's a weird conversation because they pulled over for you.
Yeah. The good thing is when I would find out where they were going, I would just say, oh, I'm trying to get farther than that, you know?
Okay.
So I would just make an excuse like that.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of that's a practical tip, right? Like ask where they're going first and then you can,
exactly.
You can make up something else to kind of gracefully dip out.
Yeah.
Did that happen a lot? Did you feel like, you know, did you have to decline a lot of rides?
I mean, there was three that stood out to me
really?
For sure.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah. It was definitely, especially because I wasn't doing it for that many times. I mean, it was one person who tried to sexually seduce me. And I just felt kind of bad for him. He was in a small town in kind of the Midwest. It seems like he wasn't comfortable with his sexuality, you know, and which made me sad, you know, and it just seemed kind of desperate. Like he was just looking for some physical affection, you know, but still I declined that one. And then there was another person. This one was all bad. I mean, he was talking about how it was at a truck stop and we're having conversations, et cetera. And he was talking about how his ex-wife was trying to send him to prison and how he wanted to kill her. And then he was telling me these things and he says, so you still want to ride? And I was and that was one where I just said, I'll pass. I didn't even make an excuse. I mean, the idea of just getting in the car with someone who was trying to, and then the third one actually that comes to mind was I didn't decline it, but I got in the car with somebody and it felt rushed. I didn't really get a feel for him, but I was struggling to find a ride that day. And this guy within 5 or 10 minutes, he started pounding the steering wheel, talking about how he hates politicians. And then he was also sharing that he said that if he hadn't gotten into lifting weights, he would have killed a man by now. And I remember that was one where I was literally had my hand on the door handle thinking okay, I might need to jump out, you know?
Right. How did you get him to stop and let you out?
Well, the interesting thing was he ended up taking me 45 miles and it was really interesting. He was one of those people where you could see he had a lot of pain in his heart, but he really wanted to do a kind thing. So it was interesting. When he said, he wished me luck and he gave me a real hug. It wasn't just hey, thank you. It was he embraced me and it just seemed he was in a ton of pain.
And, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where a lot of that, where anger comes from a lot, you know, but it's, you know, it can be dangerous. You can look at these. I mean, that's why I like talking about this stuff. Cause it's you know, you can look at these on the surface and say, well, what an adventure. And there's the film that came out of it and all this stuff. But I mean, you are dealing with, if you go on a trip like this, you might deal with some situations and some people that I've been very lucky in my hitchhiking experience, although it's been fairly limited. But well, I've been unlucky too, picking up a hitchhiker once and getting sort of scammed and having him drive him across and feeling. It's not a good feeling when you know, there's nowhere to go. You're in the car and you're kind of in the situation. Nobody knows. I talked to one guest who did a cheeky thing, would just kind of be like, oh, you know, I have to take a picture of your license plate because my mom makes me do this and she makes me send this to everybody before I get in the car. You know, she was a single female. I thought that was a pretty good tactic because she would kind of make light of it. And then, but then she would actually do it and send it to somebody. And so they knew that somebody knew who she was with, and it just created another level of safety if somebody's like against doing that, then maybe it's time to worry.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's, well, do you want to share again once more? I know we mentioned it a couple times where everybody can find all the goodies.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity, man. So the first thing, it's going to be streaming. It's streaming on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, and Google Play. And then you could also just go to my website. We are all in this together movie.com, where you can, you know, watch the trailer and you can click the links to find the film and then also read a little bit more about the film and support Tom's cartoons if that's something that you'd like to do as well.
Yeah. I'm going to go on there and check out Tom's cartoons. And thanks, man. Thanks for the conversation, for staying up so late to have it, and for taking the effort to not just go on this adventure and go through all the things you went through personally as a traveler, but also capturing it and getting to share those interactions, which again, I thought was, you know, it's hard to get authentic interactions on film, but the glasses were key, man. So well done with that. Yeah. Hope we can stay in touch.
Thank you, Jason. I just wanted to share, man. I thank you for what you're doing, man. You're expanding the travel community, you know, and just the stories that you have on your podcast. It's super inspiring. And just, so I really appreciate what you're doing. You're spreading the love for the traveling community. So thank you.
Thanks, man. I'm trying.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Yep. Thank you so much.
Yep.
There you have it. Once again, thanks and congrats to Daniel for this accomplishment. And I love that, going back to the beginning, this idea of him combining adventure and connection. Isn't that what travel is all about in many ways? Adventure with human connection, those two things together. Of course, big themes pervading this show. And somebody else in this community is about to get connected through travel. I wanted to give her a shout out. Got an email from Nicole. You know, I was excited by this headline. First solo trip. Yes. She says, "Hey, Jason, I'm Nicole from Louisville, Kentucky." That's right, Louisville, not Louisville. I know that. I love those towns where you just have to be in the know on how to pronounce them, no matter how they're spelled. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. She goes on to say, "While enjoying the episodes on the podcast made me realize what I want out of life, which is to see/experience as much of the world while I can, seeing as it could be taken away at any moment. I've also given away/donated the majority of my belongings because I would rather gain experiences than material items. It has been a long time coming, but now I am excited to write you that I'm finally taking my first solo trip out of the country. This week, I will be flying to Australia where I will board a cruise to the French Polynesian Islands. This is literally a dream come true. I'm grateful to you and all the other people who share their stories and continue to inspire people on their travel journey. Thanks for everything. You are all amazing." End of the email there. And I wanted to say that this gratitude she's expressing is for you too, my friend. This is what I wanted to bring up. I mentioned it at the top. She's expressing some gratitude to the people that have come on the show and everything like that, but also to you. Like, you are somebody that I'm sure has inspired other people by sharing your travel story, gotten somebody excited about travel, or even if it's outside of travel, you know, sharing something about your experience that inspired somebody else and encouraged somebody else in some way. So I just wanted to give you some props. You should give yourself some props for being that person. We all have the opportunity to be that person. And this goes back maybe to one of the core themes of the show today, the kindness of strangers. We all have the ability to make that impact. And I'm going to leave you with a quote from a book called The Kindness of Strangers by Katrina Kittel. This is a quote from the book where she says, "Kindness costs nothing, but it means everything." So take that and enjoy the rest of your day. And I'll see you next time. Peace and love to you and yours. Cheers.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.